Good morning and welcome to Assets and Aging, Affording the Future, the live local show that's all about the issues of aging. Glad to have you with us. Glad you're here. Lots to talk about today. As always, pencil and paper is good. Let me get some stuff out of the way right away. Welcome to Assets and Aging, Affording the Future, the live local show that's all about the issues of aging. I'm your host for 18 years right here on KFPK, Bob Scrivano. Don't forget, I am not an attorney. I do not practice law. I do not give legal advice. If you want legal advice, you should consult an attorney, preferably one that actually knows what the heck they're doing. I have a California insurance license, a legal document assistant license recorded in Sacramento County. I'm not securities licensed. Don't want to be, because then I can tell you the truth. I don't know. There's probably a bunch of other stuff. I'm a notary. I'm not a licensed electrician. I cannot turn your brake drums. So that's all the stuff that we have to get out of the way. And remember, everything we talk about here, everything is my opinion only and should never be taken as any form of legal advice or any kind of advice, tax advice, whatever. Okay, we've said all that. Now we got stuff to talk about as it relates to getting older, to seniors, to whatever. Lots of ways to contact me. The best way, the single best way, the really the best way is my phone. You can call my phone at 800-999-8007. 800-999-8007. You can go to my website, Assets, A-S-S-E-T-S, Assets, and aging, aging.com. Assets and aging.com. There you can find my next upcoming workshop. You can sign up for my workshops. I've got one coming up very soon. You can send me an email with a question. You can sign up for my newsletter. You can get information. You can listen to archives of this show and my podcast. Every Wednesday at noon, I do a podcast. It's one subject long. It's 15 minutes usually, and you can listen to them live, or you can go back and listen to my podcast on my website. There's just a ton of information. You can follow my Twitter account. Lots of ways to get in touch with me. At the end of the day, this show boils down to two questions. I'm going to give you 1 second, and you tell me what they are. Okay. Can you tell me what they are? The two questions always are, who's going to take care of me, and how am I going to pay for it? That's what this show has been about for 18 years, and what I've been doing for over 25 years, is helping people figure out, as we get older, as our parents age, as we age, as our generation ages, as our population ages, who's going to take care of us and how are we going to pay for it? My show last week was a long look at some studies showing the impact not only on the current generation and what it costs for long-term care in 2014, the year that all the studies were done. By the way, if you didn't listen to it, go back and listen to it. What costs in care would look like in 2030. It's two studies put out by the Kaiser Foundation, and they're excellent, excellent, excellent studies. It's important to know. It's important to stay informed. It's important to not be a victim. It's important to be talking to somebody that spends their entire life dealing with senior issues and elder issues and that kind of stuff. It's one thing to plan for death and dying and how do my kids get my stuff and all that kind of stuff, but it's a completely different issue when it comes time to dealing with how do I take care of my parents? How do I pay for them? Who's going to take care of them? Where are they going to live? Where's my spouse going to live? My spouse has dementia. My spouse has Parkinson's. My spouse is 95 years old. How do I deal with all of this stuff? And it's important you're talking to someone, because everybody's dealing, every family listening to me right now in your family and you know who it is, there is somebody who is dealing with this, or your neighbor, or your friend. One of the studies I quoted from last week said 4 out of every 10 Americans is a caregiver. I mean, just let that sink in for a minute. This is happening to everybody. It's expensive, it's emotionally draining, it's physically draining, and that's what this show is about. So if you find yourself in this circumstance, and you don't know what to do, and you're not sure who to turn to, well, you're listening to California's single best source for information on long-term care issues, senior issues, how do we take care of ourselves, how do we pay for it, what works, what doesn't work. You know, I communicate every week with all kinds of other people who do this, really smart elder law attorneys, I know all the all the really good elder law attorneys and people who do this kind of stuff in California. And we communicate all the time about what's coming and what there is and who's doing what out there. You know, I had an attorney send me, was talking to me the other day, telling me he saw a power of attorney done by an attorney in which you can't do anything to protect assets in the until the person's actually been in a nursing home for 3 months. Now stop and think about that. If you can't do anything to protect what you have until the person's been in a nursing home for 3 months, and the nursing home's $10,000 a month, it means you have to go through at least $30,000 before you can even do anything to protect what you have. I mean, stop and think about that for a minute. The issues of frailty, the issues of long-term care are a completely different framework from thinking about how we take care of ourselves. The other day, I punished myself. I don't know if any of you have ever done that, but I punished myself. Bob, what did you do? I went to a workshop because I saw an ad about a $399 living trust. So I decided, I've been to these before, but not for a long time. So I thought, on behalf of my clients, I will save them the time and I will go to this workshop. So first thing they did was they had a card, but the person making the presentation was not the name on the card. I still don't know who the person's name who was on the card was. And no, I'm not going to tell you what organization this was or whatever. It was a non-attorney. He said he was a non-attorney, but he clearly knew nothing about anything. I mean, here are some of the things that I heard at this meeting. And this is why $399, and everybody's going, wow, I want to go get me one of these. He said there are 3 laws that determine probate. I'm not an attorney, I don't practice law, but no, there aren't. Go to the probate code. In California. Just look up the probate code in California and tell me if there's only 3 things in there. I mean, stop and think about that for a minute. Okay? He said that the trustors of a trust, the creators of the trust, own the trust. No, they don't. No, they don't. He said that the court has no control of trust assets and that you could never have a challenge to a trust. That's not true. I know lots of attorneys in which family members have challenged trusts, and they've had to deal. I know lots. The courts are full of people who have challenged a trust. It avoids probate, but it doesn't necessarily avoid a challenge. So he says the court has no control of trust assets. That's not true. A court can control whatever it wants to control, folks. That makes it sound like you've somehow protected things. In fact, I asked the person doing it, I said, look, if somebody goes into a nursing home and there's a Medi-Cal estate claim, would your $399 trust protect that family from a Medi-Cal recovery? And his answer was, well, in most cases. The answer to that question is, in no case. In no case does a revocable living trust protect assets from a Medi-Cal estate recovery. What you hope that the trust does is give you authority to do what you need to do when the day comes to protect it, but he was wrong. He then said something that I about fell off my chair. This is why you need to be careful who you listen to. That the successor trustee has no role during your lifetime. The successor trustee is generally who takes over management of the trust after mom and dad are gone, after they're dead. But you know what? The successor trustee also takes over if mom or dad are incompetent, or too frail, or resign. So he said that this, I wrote all this stuff down, folks. I'm quoting from my notes. He said that the successor trustee has no role during your lifetime, and that is simply not true. He also said if we have any assets in our name, that triggers a probate. That also is not true. For instance, joint tenancy does not create a probate. Having a named beneficiary on your bank account does not create a probate. If you own your life insurance policy and have a named beneficiary, that does not create a probate. I could keep going. You get the idea. Simply because you have your name on an asset, depending on what the asset is, if you have an IRA and you named a beneficiary, there's no probate. So to simply say that if we have any assets in our name, that triggers a probate is not a true statement. It's simply not a true statement. He also said that if you name in your pour over will, most trusts come with a will called a pour over will, P-O-U-R, that if you have assets in your pour over will, like personal property or jewelry or whatever, when you die, there won't be any probate. That those assets, those personal belongings will pour over directly to your trust and there will be no probate. I called two elder law attorneys today and said, I just want to make sure, is that true or not? And they both, before I got the question out of my mouth, said, of course that's not true. But yet he led people to believe that they had a pour over will that would not go through probate. He also then said, because you've named beneficiaries in a trust, that there can't be any challenges to the trust. There can't be any family fights. I about lost it when he said that, folks, because if you talk to any estate planning attorney or elder law attorney, they will tell you that there are lots of family fights after mom and dad died, even if you have a trust. So to sit there and say that if you have, now there's a no contest clause and in most trusts, and the person might lose and not get anything, but that doesn't mean somebody can't go hire an attorney and challenge a trust. You want to write it in such a way or have some, but to have somebody say that, so what kind of trust, do you think this is, so far, do you think this is worth the $399 or not? He then told me something that, not me, he told the group that was there. He told me something very interesting. And again, I have to say this very carefully, but somebody there was a Kaiser member. And he started talking about living wills. By the way, we don't have living wills in California. We have advanced health care directives. But he kept calling them living wills. In fact, the brochure, I'm looking at the brochure, and it says living wills. It says the term living will refers to what many people commonly know as the right to die clause. We don't have living wills in California. We have advanced health care directives. But he said something very interesting, and this really bothered me. Someone there in the group said, we belong to Kaiser, and Kaiser has an advanced health care directive that we filled out. Would that advanced health care directive work, or do we need your advanced living will? And the person doing the workshop said, Kaiser's advanced healthcare directive only works at Kaiser. And I need to reassure people that, because there were other people who went to these workshops, they do a lot of them, that believe that. And I'm here to assure you that if you went to one of these workshops and were told that, your Kaiser Advanced Healthcare Directive will work at other hospitals and doctors other than Kaiser. And this was an attempt to scare this person into buying this package, being told that his Kaiser Advanced Healthcare Directive would not work. Again, I'm taking notes. I can go on and 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 on. He also said, the brochure says, I'm reading from the brochure now, it's an 8-page brochure. I'm reading from the brochure and it says that the trust can be changed by the person at any time during their lifetime. Now, if you've listened to this show for any length of time, and you've heard me when elder law attorneys are on that are I have great confidence in over the years, all along the way from Gary Lieberman to Josh Eisenberg to Dustin McFarland to other elder law attorneys that I have great respect for who've been on this show, they will tell you, in fact, that most trusts you can't amend if you become disabled. So he says the trust can be changed by the person at any time during their lifetime. But if you're incompetent, you can't change most trusts. So for him to say that is simply not correct. The trust must contain specific language that allows someone to change the trust other than the creator of the trust. My point in all of this is really simple. When you have documents done, and by the way, I can go on and on and on. For instance, in one place on this brochure, by the way, this brochure, he admitted that after the trust was done, that an insurance agent would come to visit you, yet nowhere on the brochure does it say that, even though I asked the question, which by law it's supposed to say. But that's okay. That's a story for another day. They also talked at the very back page about all the financial things that they could do. And one of them is long-term care insurance at reduced rates. It's a violation of the insurance code if an agent discounts a policy. So my point in all of this, okay, and I could keep going on and on and on this, folks. I was there an hour, and I have to tell you, it was painful to me. It was truly painful. And I'm saying this because it's important when you have documents done, whether it's trusts or powers of attorney or a will or whatever it is, that you ask whoever's preparing those documents lots and lots of questions. You ask them lots and lots and lots of questions. I asked if the powers of attorney, for instance, were immediate and springing. He did not know what I was talking about. You've heard elder law attorneys on my show talk about it many times. Does the power of attorney only go into effect when you're declared incompetent, or is it in effect when you sign it? Do the documents have frailty language in them that allows someone to manage my affairs if I can't? Do the documents have the ability to apply for government benefits and to maximize government benefits? Do the documents have special provisions that allow for dealing with community property issues if we're a married couple? Do the documents allow someone to amend your trust or to deal with your trust using a power of attorney? Do your powers of attorney allow someone to create a trust, both revocable or irrevocable? When does the power of attorney go into effect? Can gifts be made out of the trust or the power of attorney? Those of you that have been to my workshops know that one of the pages I hand out is a whole list of things that a document should include. It's another reason why you want to come to my workshops. But you must look at your documents, not in just in terms of was it cheap? Was it $399? But and in fact, then when I asked the person, because they kept talking about the attorney that did it, and when I asked the person for the name of the attorney, he wouldn't give me the name of the attorney. And by the way, the attorney, I asked him if it was a local attorney, and he said, no, the attorney was in Southern California. You have to ask lots of questions when you look at your documents or you review your documents. Do they not only deal with dying issues? In other words, when Mildred and I are dead, when my wife and I are dead, our children get what's left. And we would like to do that as simply and as easily and free of probate and as privately as possible. That's an important issue, and you need to ask all those questions. But you also need to ask questions, and you need to understand in your documents where it deals with frailty, where it deals with old age, where it deals with incapacity, where it deals with allowing us to do the kinds of things that we need to do if someone's incompetent or incapacitated or just not thinking straight or, I don't know, whatever. I think you understand what I'm talking about. It's really important for you to know where it says those things in your documents. It's also important for you to know that anything's changeable as long as it's changeable. Bob, what do you mean by that? Well, first of all, do the documents say you can change them? For instance, many trusts say that it takes both mom and dad to change them. So when dad dies, in some cases, the trust becomes non-changeable. So, or the trust says it takes mom and dad both to change the trust and make fixes to it, but dad's incompetent. So, first of all, you have to make sure that the documents are, in fact, changeable. And then you have to look at them in light of not only what happens if I die and it goes to my kids, but what happens if I mostly die? Do the documents allow my spouse, my children, my grandchildren, my brother, my sister, my nephew, whoever it is, do the documents allow for someone to deal with the special needs of someone who's frail? Do they allow someone to quietly go about, when my mom was starting to lose it and become more frail, I didn't want to have my mother declared incompetent. I didn't need to do that. My brother didn't want to do that. We wanted to quietly be able to go and take care of the needs of my mother, whether it was her healthcare needs or her financial needs or buying food and groceries or whatever it was. We wanted to be able to do that quietly as a family and not have to have, I didn't want to have my mom declared incompetent so that we could do things, which then might have meant I couldn't do them. So when you review your documents, are they HIPAA compliant? Do they have frailty language in them? Do they allow for community property issues? Do they allow for gifting? Do they allow for opening and closing an account? Do they allow for creating or amending or altering trusts, including creating irrevocable trusts? Do they allow us to deal with the stuff that we need to do if we become completely and totally incapacitated or incompetent? I don't know what the answer is in your world. If you would like a free review, just call me, set up a time, come in and see me, and I would be happy to do whatever I can to help you. You can call me at 800-999-8007. 800-999-8007. If it's something I can't understand, I can get it to people that are smarter than I am. I can't offer you a legal opinion, but I can tell you what I think as far as long-term care provisions or frailty provisions. Or you can go to my website, assetsandaging.com, assetsandaging.com, And you can sign up for an appointment. You can come to a workshop. You can send me an email and ask me a question. Or you can sign up for my newsletter. My newsletter is free. If you're not on my newsletter list, you should be. You can always go to my website at assetsandaging.com. Again, assetsandaging.com. assetsandaging.com. We're going to take a little break. We'll be back after the break. Much more to talk about here on Assets and Aging. Thank you so much for being with me. I appreciate all of you. I look forward to seeing you at an upcoming workshop or giving me a call. In the meantime, we'll be back in just a few minutes. So stick with us right here on Assets and Aging, Affording the Future. Welcome back and welcome to Assets and Aging, Affording the Future, the live local show. That's all about the issues of aging. How do we take care of mommy and daddy and grammy and grampy and our spouse and whoever the heck else there is in the world we need to take care of? Who's going to pay for it? How do we do it? How do we pick the right facility? Is home care the best? Is a nursing home the best? Is assisted living the best? What's the PACE program? What's IHSS? What's the waiver program in which Medi-Cal helps pay for assisted living? How do VA benefits work? Can I get them? Can I get them? Who should I get them from? And what's this Medi-Cal thing? Is there recovery? Are they going to take my house away? All the stuff that happens to us as we get older. How do I use my Medicare properly? What's the difference between admission to a hospital and observation in a hospital? How does this all work? How does it all fit together? What about my medical records? Who has access to my medical records? Who has access to my financial records if I don't? Who can pay for a funeral for me? Who can if I'm a vet, how do I wind up in Dixon? What all the 10,000 things that happen to us as we get older, talking about that and coming up with answers is what we do. And sometimes the show is kind of eclectic. I kind of wander around because across my desk every week comes stuff, and I read something and it catches my eye, and I go, oh, wait a minute, that's interesting. How come, you know, what did I keep that article for? I was looking through some newspaper articles that I have this morning as I was getting ready to do the show, and I went, now why did I keep this article, this newspaper? There must have been something in there I wanted. There must have been something in there that I needed. There must have been something that made sense to me. So as I'm doing that today, I run across an article from a couple days ago. But I kept it for some reason. It's from Friday, February the 19th, so it's last week. And I'm looking at it, and on the front page of the Wall Street Journal, which is, by the way, the only decent newspaper left in America, okay? And it says on the front page of the Friday, February 19th Wall Street Journal, it has a huge article just below the fold. And I'll bet you more people didn't pay attention to it than paid attention to it. And you're going to hear some newspaper rustling as I go through this. Ignore it. I'm actually reading from the newspaper. I'm not reading it from the computer. Because I get the journal. I prefer print, and I get it delivered to my house every day. So anyhow, on the front page of the February 19th Wall Street Journal, Friday, it says, hospice bills sting Medicare. Now, what a surprise. Sometimes when I look at stuff, okay, I'm gonna read you another article in a minute, okay, from the GAO, the Government Accountability Office, that you'll go, well, we all knew that, but sometimes it takes a while for people to catch up to the curve about what's going on with seniors and the war on seniors and all that. If you listen to my radio show, if you missed my radio show last week, you should go back and listen to it. It's archived on my on my website. And my website is assetsandaging.com. Assets, A-S-S-E-T-S, and A-N-D, aging, A-G-I-N-G.com. Assetsandaging.com. And you can go to my website and you can listen to that program. I spent a lot of time talking about what's happening with seniors and care and expense versus income. All of you that got a Social Security check this year with no increase, but yet you saw an increase in costs of drugs, you saw an increase in the cost of your Medicare supplement, you saw an increase in all kinds of stuff. So anyhow, I'm reading this, and the headline is, again, this is the Friday, February 19th, Wall Street Journal, front page, below the fold, more dementia patients and others who die slowly are receiving care, causing costs to rise. Well, there's a surprise. If you remember, sometimes, folks, I think people wonder why everybody is mad at politicians right now. Well, one of the reasons is a lot of them are just plain stupid because they never deal with the law of unintended consequence. I spend a lot of time talking to people about the law of unintended consequence. Okay? And we have an aging population. Those of you that are my age, answer this question. Okay, I'll give you a free prize or so. I don't know. Just answer the question. Many years ago, when hospice started, in order to be on hospice, there was a requirement, a general requirement. What was that requirement? That's it. You got it. You had to be within 6 months of dying. You had to be within 6 months of dying. And hospice is paid for by Medicare. So you had to be within 6 months of, you know, assuming room temperature. And then you could get hospice. Okay? I want to read you a statistic. You know, I talked about statistics last year, but let me read this to you. Now, by the way, hospice program has been around for 33 years. It's not new. And remember, it used to be that the doctor had to certify that you were likely to die within about 180 days, 6 months. Okay? But that's not true anymore. Now, patients could be on hospice for quite some time, and they can be people with dementia whose declines can take years. Hospice care providers, I'm reading from the article, hospice care providers are partly responsible for the expansion, sometimes canvassing nursing homes and other facilities. I've warned you about this. Sometimes canvassing nursing homes and other facilities for Medicare patients to persuade to enroll in hospice programs, even though they're in a nursing home. Patients, their families, and sometimes their doctors have ample reason to agree. For many, it entitles them to care that wouldn't otherwise be covered by blah, 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 which cost Medicare more money. Between 2005 and 2013, about 107,000 patients received hospice care. Now listen to this. For an average of 1,000 days. That's 3 years. They received, again, let me read that to you again. Between 05 and 13, 107,000 patients received hospice care for an average of nearly 1,000 days spread out over 4 calendar years. They cost Medicare, listen to this, 14% of its overall hospice spending, even though they accounted for just 1.3% of its hospice patients. We now have private hospice, for-profit hospice companies as a result of this. Now, what am I, Bob, you're mean. Are you telling me we shouldn't have hospice? No. I'm not telling you that at all. And when I read you the next article, hopefully you'll understand what I'm talking about. Medicare ain't free, folks. They don't have a printing, well, they do have a printing press, but there's not a bunch of elves in Washington that just print out money for Medicare. It comes from taxpayers who pay into the program. Everybody talks about Social Security going bust, but Social Security is peanuts compared to what's going to happen when Medicare goes bust, and this is one of the reasons why. Because what used to be a program for the dying is now a comfort program for people for up to 3 or 4 years. Now, there's nothing wrong with that. Please don't send me email letters saying, you evil, you know what, you hate hospice. No, I'm with people all the time. My mom was on hospice for 6 days before she died. You can hear me turning the paper here because I'm now turning to the rest of it here. Okay? So let me give you an example. Dementia is now 22% of all hospice costs, while cancer is only 12%. Remember, hospice was set up to do what? Take care of people who were terminal, to make their end comfortable. The spending by Medicare on hospice has doubled over the last 9 years. Well, I mean, stop and think about that. Average number of days, I'm going to read something from the article. Average number of days Medicare patients spend in hospice as of 2013, that's when the study was done. Cancer, the 10 most common types, they spend an average of 46 days on hospice. Why is that? Because they died from the disease. COPD, they spend an average of 83 days. Remember, COPD used to be, I mean, you could have COPD for a long time. It's only at the very end. You could have COPD for years. Alzheimer's and other dementia, 93 days on average were spent by Alzheimer's patients on hospice. Then I want to read you a little headline in here. I mean, hang on for a second. The journal's analysis found patients who spent at least a year in hospice received visits on about 13.6 days a month in 2013, compared with an average of 17.6 for those who spent just 1 month in hospice. Long-term care patients can be more lucrative to hospice care providers. You think? Remember, hospice was originally designed to cover the costs of cancer patients who were terminal. Now it's for almost anybody. I am not saying don't do hospice. The average rate, I'm looking for. People expect, let's see if I'm reading in the right place. This is a long article, folks. People expect to see a photo of a temple when you go to upright in an easy chair, her walker. During the early, nearly 850 days she spent in hospice care, her services consisted mostly of visits by home health aides, nurses, and social workers also saw her, but less frequently. Such patients can be more lucrative to providers than those who die rapidly. Medicare pays hospice agencies for each day a beneficiary is enrolled, regardless of whether services are rendered on a given day. Did you hear that? I'll read it again. Medicare pays hospice agencies for each day a beneficiary is enrolled, regardless of whether services are rendered on a given day. For typical days, when patients aren't hospitalized, the average rate was about 100 $140 a day for hospice care. Now, I love hospice. I love hospice workers. But when everybody complains about their taxes are too high and the government's taking too much money, and the reason that medical costs in the United States are going up, you have to begin to look at what's really happening. It's like my discussions in the past about the difference between observation and admission to a hospital. If you don't know what that is, go back to listen to one of my podcasts or one of my former programs. You have to begin to understand what's going on in medicine. That's why your doctor isn't allowed to admit you to the hospital anymore, because that costs more money than the hospital paying a capitation cost. I mean, Medicare paying a capitation cost to the hospital, which then employs a doctor that they pay a salary to. Doesn't mean you get better care. It means it's the way medicine's run now. So to understand hospice, you need to understand that it makes up a huge bump. I'm not saying don't do it. I like hospice. I think it serves a wonderful purpose in many cases. But I also can tell you, in a lot of cases, I think it's being abused. And it's costing taxpayers a lot of money. We hear people talk about what taxpayers pay out for Medi-Cal for people in nursing homes. It pales compared to hospice care and what that's costing. I'm not saying don't do it. Please don't write me and say, no, listen to what I'm saying. I'm saying you need to understand in today's world how Medicare works, where its money comes from, where its money goes, and all those kinds of things. I want to tie that with an article I literally read today. And this is from, hang on a second, what's this from? I can't find out what this is from. I don't remember what website it was from, but it's called, I think it's ATR.org, and I don't remember what ATR is, but it's Watchdog Finds Billions, that's billions with a B, Possible, Fraudulent Obamacare Payments. The federal government, I'm reading, has failed to properly monitor enrollee eligibility for Obamacare. Those of you that know anything about the exchanges or enrollment, anybody can enroll without any verification of anything. I don't care what anybody says. I've seen it done. According to a report by the GAO, the Government Accountability Office, I didn't say this, the GAO said it. As a result, the government has made billions of dollars in Obamacare subsidy payments to individuals that may have been committing fraud. And people wonder why, on both sides of the aisle, why the American public is torqued. They can't figure it out. We don't understand why there's so much outrage out there. We don't understand why people are so upset. Because you're wasting our money by just flushing it down the toilet. Why don't you just flush it down the toilet? It would be simpler. Not millions, billions. As the report notes, the system used by the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, CMS, that's the federal agency that governs all Medicare and Medicaid, relies on data sent by three government agencies, the IRS, the SSA, and Social Security, and the DHS, Department of Health Services, to check eligibility for Obamacare. However, the system used by CMS is unable to verify many inconsistencies in the data. This inability, I'm reading, to properly verify enrollment has meant billions of dollars have been sent out to enrollees without verifying whether the applicants were fraudulent. As the report notes, I am now reading from the GAO report. According to GAO analysis of CMS, Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, about 431,000 applications just from 2014, with about $1.7 billion in associated subsidies for 2014, still had unresolved inconsistencies as of April 2015, several months after the close of the coverage year. An auditor's report examining Minnesota's Obamacare exchange found the exchange enrolled more than 100,000 individuals who were ineligible for the program. Why was it never? Because you don't have to prove anything, folks. You just have to go sign up. And you get a free tax subsidy and you get free health care. An October 23, 2015 report by GAO found that Obamacare exchanges, both state and federal, were failing to verify key enrollment information for applicants. Now listen to this. Including social security numbers, household income, and citizenship. So they didn't verify any of those things which are required by the law. So someone who's not a citizen, someone who doesn't have a social security number, can get a subsidy and get free health care. I don't know what to tell you. You read that with the other stuff and you read it with this and you sit here and go, everybody wonders why healthcare is so important, so costly in this country. We all went ballistic the other day. I did included. I can't remember his name, but you remember the guy that had the drug that raised the price of the drug from like $35 to like $15,000 or whatever it was, $100,000. You remember. You know, he testified in front of Congress. And we all agreed he's not a nice person. You remember that. That's peanuts, folks. Compared to the fact that in 1 year, the Obamacare exchanges paid out $1.7 billion in subsidies to people who didn't qualify for it. I mean, just let that sink in. 431,000 people got Obamacare in 2014 who probably didn't qualify for it, according to the GAO. Listen to this. This is not that old. A July 16th, 2015 audit by GAO found that 11 of 12 fake test applicants received coverage for the entire 2014 coverage period, despite many using fraudulent documents and others providing no documentation at all. From these 11 applicants alone, healthcare.gov paid $30,000 in tax credits. So they set up 12 fake applicants, 11 of them got through, and the government paid them $30,000 in tax credits. That's okay. It's only your money. A June 16th, 2015 report released by Health and Human Services Officer of the Inspector General found that $2.8 billion worth of Obamacare subsidies and payments had been made in 2014, listen to this, without verification. So when you're looking around and you're trying to figure out what to do and you're trying to figure out how to make sense of all of it and you're trying to figure out how to pay for mom and dad or where they should be or what about Medi-Cal or what's available to them, and you hear, well, you know, did you listen to what I just said? Did you listen to what I said in last week's show? If you don't think there's a war on seniors, then you're not paying attention. Because the $2.8 billion worth of Obamacare subsidies that were paid, here's another one. On June 10th of 2015, the Inspector General found that the IRS failed to properly administer $11 billion in Obamacare tax credits. So the next time you're a Social Security recipient and they tell you that there's no money to give you a Social Security raise, there's no money, I want you just to look around and read and pay attention and look at the amount of waste and fraud. People who paid nothing into the system getting billions and billions and billions and not my words, but the Office of the Inspector General, the General Accounting Office of the United States saying that this is going on. And as a result, seniors who paid into the system for 50, 60, 70 years can't get a Social Security raise because we're told there's no money available. You have a choice as you get older. You can be prepared. You can pay attention. You can get help. You can make sure what you've worked a lifetime for is protected and it goes to your family and it doesn't wind up getting flushed down the toilet, or you can become just another statistic on a table somewhere in a government office. You have a choice. I mean, it's not my choice, it's your choice. If you make the choice to get help, then call me. Get on the phone and call 800-999-8007. Get in. The consultation is free. And we'll talk about it and we'll see if we can help and make sure that as you or your family member or your loved one becomes older and more frail, you have planned to protect what they worked 50 years for. Not give it to somebody that it does, you know, never mind. You heard what I just read. Or go to my website, assetsandaging.com, assetsandaging.com, assetsandaging.com. Sign up for one of my free upcoming workshops. Send me an email. Ask me a question. Set up an appointment, but get in to see me. Age doesn't go away. We don't get younger. We get older. We get more frail. So do our parents. So does our mom. So does our dad. Take today to make a difference in your family's life. Call me, 800-999-8007. But don't become a victim. Get the help, get the direction, get the things you need so that you can plan for the future. Assets and Aging, affording the future so you can answer the two great questions. Who's going to take care of me and how am I going to pay for it? We'll see you all here again next week. We'll see you on my podcast on Wednesday and on my upcoming workshop. Look forward to meeting y'all. Have a wonderful day. And don't forget, call somebody up you haven't talked to for a while and tell them you love them. Talk to you later. Bye-bye.